morning. How y'all doing? Good. That was a little lame, though. Let's be a little bit stronger. How y'all doing? Good, good. We're going to get started in about 30 seconds, but what I would love for you to do is find someone you don't know and answer this question. Why did you come to a seminar on sticky faith when you could be having coffee by yourself or going to another seminar right now? Okay, so I'm very curious. So turn to someone that you don't know and answer that question. Go for it. 30 seconds. We can come back together. That'd be great. So what were some of the reasons that you chose this seminar? Oh, you're waving at a friend. I thought you were so eager to share. You even stood up. I mean, that was exciting. And by the way, we're making more handouts, and if folks could help get more chairs out, maybe that would be really helpful, please. What were some reasons? Yeah. Oh, there's two seats there. But you are so courteous, waving to each other. Do you have an answer to the question? Oh, great. Okay, Stacy, what were you going to say? 7-year-old daughter. It's mystifying sometimes when we look at kids who have graduated from amazing families and amazing churches and still drift. So why is that? What can we do? Great. Yes, you, sir. Yes. Great. So some of the challenges and opportunities, perhaps, of blended families. Great point. Maybe one more person. What brought you to this seminar today? My enthusiasm. Okay, thank you. Well, what is your name? Robert? Robert, you... You get extra lunch on me today in the dining hall, so thank you. I am pretty passionate about this, and I'm passionate for many reasons, but really at the top of the list, I gotta say, is that I am a mom. And these are our three children. Dave and I have three kids. This picture was actually taken in October, and what's out of date about it is that my 13-year-old son is now taller than me. Which is, as you can see by my height, no small accomplishment because I'm 6 feet. So he's past me. And Krista and Jessica. And as I've done more and more research, my passion to see kids experience lifelong faith has only grown. Now, I need to say, Stacy, you know, you kind of said, well, why do some kids drift? If you've come to this seminar because you want to know a foolproof plan for building sticky faith... then you should get your money back for this seminar, which, by the way, was zero. But there is no foolproof plan. What we've done in our research is we've identified some correlations. If you're familiar with research terminology, there's a difference between correlation and causation. Causation is if you do A, then you're fairly guaranteed B and C. Correlation is the more that we tend to do A, the more that we also tend to see B and C. So we're going to be talking about trends and patterns in families and churches that build sticky faith. How many of you have children who are, let's say, preschool or younger? Preschool or younger. Okay, how many of you have children who are elementary school? Okay, middle school, high school. There's a whole special prayer room for you all, parents in middle school, high school. Okay, college and beyond. How about grandparents? Yeah, oh yeah, the grandparents cheer. That's the only group that cheered. Just out of curiosity, how many of you have read a sticky faith book or heard some teaching about sticky faith? Okay, not very many of you. This past week, I had the chance, because one of our teammates at the Fuller Youth Institute, his wife had a baby. And I love going to the hospital day one when babies are born. And I always volunteer to bring Starbucks or Jamba Juice to the new parents. This time it was Starbucks. And I got to hold little Will Daniel Mulder at about 10 hours old. Now, what was interesting in tracking with Will's parents, Jake and Lauren, who I know are going to be phenomenal parents, this is their firstborn. And so they're doing all sorts of planning while they're pregnant. In fact, I have a picture here. This is my son's, one of his little tiny baby shoes, which we've now bronzed and made into a bookend. It's about the size of my remote. Now, what are some of the things that when you're pregnant, perhaps, or awaiting your first child, we'll talk about those of you who adopted in a moment, but when you're pregnant, what are those things that you're planning for? What are some of those decisions you're thinking about, talking about with your spouse? There's some obvious ones, like the name of the baby, exactly. What else are you planning for? The room? Yeah, you're trying to get the room set. How many of you figured out the best way to the hospital? Yeah, I mean, you make that kind of plan. Those of you who adopted, you thought also about the room. You thought, how about how you were going to bond with that child? When our children are just entering our families, we tend to be real planners. I bet if I was to talk to you and hear about your plans, I could give you an A for the level of planning you did. But then our kids get older. This is my son's tennis shoe now. It's about, you know, it's like a size 11. Our kids get bigger. So do we in some ways. Our kids get older. So do we. Our kids get more busy. So do we. Our kids gain energy. We tend to lose it. And I'll tell you, the older that my kids get, the more challenging it is, largely because of their schedules, to be as intentional and thoughtful as I was even before children entered our home. As one of my good friends said to me a few weeks ago, with multiple kids, she said, I feel like there's a gun to my head because of all the pressure I feel as a parent, all the busyness, all the stress. And I'll tell you, as much as I love my kids, my job at Fuller Seminary, which is decently complicated, is a piece of chocolate cake compared to being the mom that I want to be. So when our kids are young, we're planners. But then often, as our kids get older, faith becomes an afterthought, something that we don't think about. I shared this already when I was talking about this seminar. The best research indicates that about half of our young people drift from God and from the church after they graduate from high school. Now, the good news is about half of those who drift do return to the faith and return to church. Generally, when they get older, get married, and have kids. Yeah. And maybe that's some of your stories. And that's something to celebrate, that half that return. I'm still grieving over the half who do not return. And even the half who do return, if you think about it, we make very significant decisions in our late teens, early 20s, before children enter our life. To give you a snapshot for how kids like ours experience life after high school, we interviewed some youth group graduates. And I want you to hear how they describe the transition.
Well, high school ministry was a lot of fun. It was a lot easier to follow God because my community was doing the same.
All my friends would go there. I was in the worship band.
I was this kind of picture-perfect youth group kid.
We had a huge youth group. I got to find people that were very similar to me.
It was my home. It was my favorite place to be.
Well, I'm not gonna fall away. Like, that's the last thing I'm gonna do, you know? Look at my family, look where I come from, look at the church that I come from, you know? That's the last thing. Faith is central to me. Like, that bubble burst within months.
College felt really lonely to come to a place that's so far away from everything familiar. It made me feel very alone and made me feel very insecure.
I joined a sorority right when I got to college because I knew that I wanted to make friends.
Because I had so much freedom, I really lost all my motivation for school.
Students everywhere were under the influence or had drugs or alcohol with them at school, and I was really surprised and not prepared for that.
I kind of wanted to try it, not gonna lie. I started drinking, I like started partying, I started caring about like what people thought of me a lot, wanting to be skinny, wanting to wear clothes that showed more than probably should have.
It turned out to be a lot harder to stay sober than I thought.
I ended up compromising my own values, my own beliefs, and ended up getting involved sexually with girls.
Any sense of identity that I was getting from God, I had replaced with this romantic relationship.
Losing something that was central to me, which was my virginity. I just, man, that decimated, you know. The rest of the stuff I could get back, I could heal from, you know, I could turn around and get away from. But that's something that's, you know, you can't change that. And so that just makes it impossible then for me to ever live up to that ideal that I had placed upon myself and that was placed upon me coming into college.
My relationship with God was messed up. I didn't really want anything to do with a personal relationship with God because I felt threatened by it and I felt like I would be condemned.
My best friends, who I was a roommate with, called me out and said, dude, this isn't you.
You just get to a point where it gets to be very, you achieve very low self-esteem.
I'm making decisions here that are hurting myself and hurting other people, and I didn't think myself capable of doing those things.
And it wasn't until I needed God's grace that I realized God had been there the whole time, just with his hand extended, and all I needed to do was turn around and grab it.
I kept straying away from him over and over and over, and every single time he still received me back into his arms. And he's the only one in the universe that would do that.
Andrew's back with handouts, so if you need a handout, please go ahead and raise your hand. So as I think about half of the kids and the grandkids that we care about drifting from God and the church, and as a mom and a leader and a follower of Jesus, I'm not satisfied with that. Are you? Okay, let's try that again. Because I know some of you are distracted by the arrival of the handouts. But I think I know it's really exciting. It's really a highlight of the seminar. But I think we can do better than that. When I think about half of youth group graduates drifting from God and the church, as a mom and a leader and a follower of Jesus, I'm not satisfied with that. Are you? No, so much better. So that's why we at the Fuller Youth Institute received multiple grants from the Lilly Endowment, from the Tyndale House Foundation, and others to study over 500 youth group graduates from all over the country. As well as most recently, we did interviews with 50 families, nominated families, what's called exemplar families. And I got to do about 10 of the interviews, and it really impacted my own way of thinking about sticky faith. After the seminar, there's a couple ways for you to continue to stay in touch with our research. One is that we have a new parent update. We're just starting next month. It'll come twice a month to you in your email inbox. And so if you will graciously give us your name, your mailing address, phone, and email, that would be great. And I've learned I need to announce this. There's a relationship between the legibility of your handwriting and actually receiving the e-journal. So please keep that in mind. And again, that's totally free. You can also check out hundreds of free resources at stickyfaith.org. We also have some books available for sale here at Mount Hermon at the bookstore. They asked me to bring some books to make available to you, so you can check those out, and I'll be explaining them here and there. Our format for these three seminars, three different topics, is we're going to start with research, and then we're going to get to ideas, how families actually can and are implementing this research. And we're going to end by giving you a chance to think about a plan for your own family. I get so frustrated when I hear content and I'm not sure how to implement it. And so we want to make sure that you have an opportunity every morning this week that we're together to think about what the plan looks like. I said this in the announcement. It is never too early to start implementing these principles and practices, nor is it too late. I know there are some of us in this room where you have one or more children who have already drifted from the Lord, and it grieves you deeply. I know there are grandparents in this room who your children aren't serving the Lord, and you look at your grandchildren and you think, how can I influence them? It's never too early nor too late to put this research into practice. So the first session today, the theme is mirror, the mirror that our children offer of us and what that means for our lives and our faith. So now that we've understood the problem that almost half are drifting, let's start turning to some of the solutions. Our youngest, Jessica, about 3 years ago, started this pretty adorable tradition. She started dressing up like me. My other children never did this, but she started, like, she would put on a blouse that I wore. And the next day, she would add a scarf. And the next day, a jacket. And then a hat. And she loved this particular hat, which I hardly ever wore. But in her mind, this was her favorite hat when she was acting as she would say, Kewa Powell. And then she'd put on my boots. And then if you ever see me at work, I kind of one of my, well, so trademark, so to speak, is I love a briefcase with wheels because I always want my laptop and I don't want to carry it. And she would grab my briefcase and she would roll it around our house saying, I'm Kewa Powell, I'm Kewa Powell. And I would smile and think, isn't that adorable that my daughter's dressing up like me? But then she started talking like me. And it got a little less adorable. In the blue couches in our living room, She would be Kawa Powell, dressed up, you know, boots to hat, dragging her briefcase. An imaginary Jessica would be sitting on the blue couch, and she would be wagging her finger at imaginary Jessica. Day after day, this happened. And then she had one of her best friends come over, and as five-year-olds, they were going to put on a play. Now, if your five-year-old has put on a play, you know that the coherence of the plot is a little shaky. So I had pretty low expectations for what the play was actually going to bring. But I was expecting, you know, princesses and frogs, and to my dismay, Jessica was Kawa Powell, and her friend played Jessica. And Jessica sat, the fake Jessica sat on the blue couch, and Jessica, my daughter, playing Kawa Powell, said, "Now, Jessica, you have a bad attitude. Go to your room. You're in trouble." Now, Jessica's friend's mom was sitting there with me, kind of looking at me like, "Wow, this might be a little bit awkward for you." And she was right, it was. And Jessica and I walked that mom and friend to her car, and as we were walking back to our driveway, through our driveway up to our front door, Jessica ran ahead. And it got more than awkward for me, it got painful. And I actually sat on our front steps because I just needed a few minutes alone, and I thought to myself, is this how Jessica is perceiving me as a five-year-old? Go to your room? And I thought, you know what? There is truth to how she's acting as me. She is a mirror for what she's seen in me. And quite honestly, a lot of days I don't like what she reflects back about me. Let's turn to some research. Chris Smith, now from Duke, he's done the biggest study I know of young people from all different faiths, not just Christians, but all different faiths, Jewish, Mormon, etc. And he says when it comes to kids' faith, parents get what they are. When it comes to kids' faith, parents get what they are. Now, if you're like me, that's both encouraging as well as terrifying. We have churches who walk through our sticky faith research over the course of a year in what we call a sticky faith cohort. And one of the youth pastors got to preach, who had been in the cohort, got to preach to his congregation in Texas. And he knew that there were a lot of parents in the room. So he thought, you know what? I'm going to let them know about how important their example is in the long-term faith of their kids. And so what David Fraze said, "We can't out-teach parents what you teach at home. We're not that good." The church, your children's ministry, your youth ministry can't out-teach what you teach at home. Your children's and youth ministry is not that good. Now let's pause here for a sec, because as I'm talking about how important it is, our example, our own faith, who we are as parents, please take this with a grain of salt. Remember, there is no if-then formula. I know parents with amazing faith whose kids have strayed. And I know parents with a kind of mediocre faith, to be honest, or no faith at all, who have these rock star lovers of Jesus as children. I'm not saying there's any guarantee. I'm just saying when we look at the research, arguably the most dominant influence in a kid's faith is their parents' faith. Now, earlier I said, I quoted Chris Smith, and we talk about this in previous sticky faith writings, parents get what they are. Now, here's what we've seen in more recent research. It's not so much parents get what they are, but parents get what their kids think they are. That's an important twist on the research. You might think you're modeling something to your kids or your grandkids, but what are your kids or grandkids picking up? It's not so much that we get what we are, it's we get what our kids think we are. Brené Brown, I just finished reading last week the book Daring Greatly. Has anybody read that book, Daring Greatly? Oh, one or two. I highly, highly recommend it. And she had this great quote that I added because based on her research on shame and vulnerability, the question isn't so much are you parenting the right way as it is are you the adult you want your child to grow up to be? We could just close this seminar right now and muse on that quote as far as I'm concerned. The question isn't so much are you parenting the right way as it is are you the adult you want your child to grow up to be. So I'm going to give you about 30 seconds now to do an exercise. And hopefully you have a sheet of paper, a handout, or you can do it on your phone, whatever it might be. I want you to imagine your life is a photo album. Your life is a photo album. Your actions are documented in pictures. If I was to ask one of your kids at lunch, what pictures do you see of your parents' faith, what would they tell me? If I was to ask your kids at lunch today, what pictures, if your parents' life is a photo album, what pictures do you see of your parents' faith, what would your kids tell me? Go ahead and take a few seconds to write that down. What were some of the things that you wrote down or thought of, those of you who don't have writing utensils with you? What were some of the things where you go, yeah, I think my kids would say, this is a reflection of my faith, that they're actually seeing? What did you write down? I'm sorry, serving. Great. Who else wrote down something related to serving? Yeah, great. What else? Mealtime prayers. Okay, great. Let's expand that. How about prayer overall? Who wrote down something related to prayer? Okay, who wrote something related to studying scripture? How many of you wish, and I think I'm going to ask you to raise your hand for this, how many of you wish you had more pictures in your photo album that your kids could point to as tangible examples of your faith? I mean, I'm going to raise my hand for that, to be honest. It's not so much what we think we're doing, it's what our kids are picking up. Now, as we interviewed parents, especially these 50 families, what was so encouraging is when it comes to how they, you know, tuned in to God, like a radio, parents have a variety of ways of expressing their faith, a variety of ways of developing intimacy with God in such a way that their kids observe it. For some parents, it was Bible. For others, it was journaling. For others, they wanted to be stationary. You know, they had their chair. And that's what it is for me. It's my blue couch in my living room. Others were exactly the opposite. And they were mobile. They were moving. That's when they connected with God in such a way that God changed them and they could talk to their kids about it. Others liked silence. Others liked the background noise of a coffee house or the bus ride to work. That was where they were most connected with God. So the point is, there's a variety of ways that we can tune into God, but what we saw in families who tend to have children who build sticky faith is they have made that time with God such a priority that not only is it impacting their faith, but their kids know it's impacting their faith. So let's get more tangible about how this research is fleshed out in ideas with parents. Many parents say that when it comes to building their faith, when it comes to that connection with God that fuels their faith and that their kids see, consistency is vital. Same time, same place. And I am blessed that my mom modeled this so well for me. Single mom, raised my brother and myself, and my mom had a rule. We couldn't come into the living room until 6:45 in the morning. And it wasn't because she was watching the news. It wasn't because she was reading a novel. But we would peer over the stairway, the second floor, and we could see, my brother and I could see my mom, coffee cup in one hand, Bible in the other. I have a whole shelf of books on prayer. And honestly, what's impacted my prayer life and passion and commitment as a mom to pray more than any other book, add up all the books on the shelf about prayer, was my mom's example. Same time, same place. Some of you might say, gosh, I have a challenge trying to carve out that time every day. I understand that. You know, to be honest, my goal this summer is to connect with God 5 days a week in prayer. You might think, gosh, Kara, that's wimpy. You should be doing it every day. That's a challenge for me. What some parents did is they really focused on extended times with God, especially business leaders, people who had very, very demanding jobs. They would spend a day a quarter with God, One business leader that we interviewed, he spent an hour every Saturday and an hour every Sunday praying for his extended family. He had a hard time doing it Monday through Friday, but Saturday and Sunday were his times. And his kids and his grandkids knew that he was praying for them an hour each weekend day. Other ways that parents try to live out their faith in such a way that their kids would see is they would pray with their calendar. Now, what do I mean by this? This is one awesome mom who said, here's what I do. I take my calendar and I pray about it with the Lord. And what's interesting is the Lord often shows me things I can drop from my schedule. She said, I find that prayer actually frees up my time because the Lord shows me where to focus, where to eliminate, and where to concentrate. I'm not quite there yet, but because of this mom, what I've started to do more is pray through my calendar in the morning. I look ahead at meetings. I look ahead at conversations. I look ahead at soccer games. And I ask God to work in our family and in and through me in the midst of the busy day that lies ahead. Now, when it comes to our own relationship with God, this isn't something we need to keep a secret from our children. We can, and I would say should, be talking about this with our kids. Let's say, Robert, since you said the kind words about me, I'm going to pick on you a little bit more, if that's okay. So let's say Robert is my child. Here's what we've learned in our research. When it comes to the way that we as parents talk about faith with our kids, is it is a good thing for me as a parent to ask Robert questions about Robert's faith. Like, how was church? How was youth group? What did you talk about in small group? How was children's ministry? And now, depending on my relationship with Robert, his mood, his personality, I might get an answer. I might get an answer. Or I might get kind of a leave me alone, mom, eye roll, or what Robert actually just said was, it was okay. Here's what we've learned in our research when it comes to parent-child faith conversations. Is it is a good thing for parents to keep asking questions of their kids about their kids' faith. But what is as important and much less practiced is that we as parents share about our own faith with our kids. And again, that is what is not happening in, quote, good Christian families. One of the churches that was in our Sticky Faith cohort got intrigued by how much their children, how much youth group kids, was high school students, knew about their parents' testimony. So they went to 20 different kids, heavily church kids, and asked, do you know how your parents became Christians? Would you like to guess how many of the 20 knew how their parents became Christians? Yeah, go as low as you possibly can. It starts with a Z. Zero knew how their parents became Christians. I've said that before here at Mount Hermon, and I'll tell you, one family, they're like, okay, we're going to at lunch share our testimony with our kid. And they did. And it was awesome. Lunch was the right time. You know, we don't need to force this. But I love how much time Lisa and Murphy spent going over the program themes this week. I'm sitting listening going, okay, great. This tells me what I can talk about with my kids. This helps me know how to talk about how the skit connects with the theme. I love that Mount Hermon is doing that. But what I would encourage you to do at lunch today is instead of doing what we tend to do as parents, what did you learn? What did you talk about? Why don't you say, gosh, we sang this worship song, and it meant so much to me. Or Bill talked about defeating giants, and here's a giant that I'm wrestling with in my life. What do y'all think? Level the spiritual playing field in your family by simply sharing your own spiritual journey. And I love saying to parents, our research isn't even saying you need to be more spiritual, although, you know, we'd all benefit from that probably, as we were just talking about. But what we're saying is simply share with your kids the spirituality that you already have. So if I could give you a homework assignment today, it would be to at some point today, don't just ask your kids, you know, how was the morning program, but share something yourself. It could even be about Sticky Faith. Share something yourself so that you create more of a mutual conversation. Now, I am not a fan of gender stereotypes. I've kind of resisted them much of my life, really all of my life, to be honest. But because of the research, there is something that I need to share. We're going to talk about a specific role for mom today and a specific role for dad tomorrow. That while I'm no fan of gender stereotypes, the data is strong enough that I feel like I have to share it. And it's this. There's something powerful about faith conversations with mom. There's something powerful about faith conversations with mom. Now, I'll deputize, to use the verb that we tried to come up with earlier today. Don't worry, I won't engage you in a weird song, okay, to deputize you like Murphy did. But I'll deputize you to think for a little bit as researchers. Why do you think that is? And I don't know the answer to this. I'm very curious to hear your thoughts. Why do you think there's something especially powerful about mom talking with her kids about faith? Just take some educated guesses. Yeah, Jared. Okay, and can you fill that out a little bit, like the mama bear concept?
All right, so I see my father as the protector and like breadwinner.
Okay.
But my mom is, when my dad is gone at work, my mom is the first line of defense at the home.
Okay, yeah. So part of it might just be availability, that mom's often a little bit more available, and that's true in our family. I mean, my husband has great conversations with our kids, but he doesn't usually see them until 5 or 6 o'clock, whereas I've gotten a couple hours with them. What were you going to say, Jill?
You want your mom to know your heart.
Okay, so it might not just be availability. Maybe there's something inherent in the mom-child relationship that is perhaps a little bit more nurturing. You see how I qualify all the language when it comes to gender? Like, I'll keep saying maybe and perhaps, et cetera. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, again, that in many, many relationships, the mom is more the place of grace and safeness, whereas the dad can have higher expectations, be a little bit more, well, fill in the blank with whatever you want to say. Last thought in the back. Sensitivity level. Okay, say more about that. Yeah. Mom can pick up more, yeah, which most of the time kids really like, but sometimes they know. Yeah, it is pretty interesting. Moms just tend to have a little bit more intuition for what's going on with the kids. Okay, one last thought. Yes, and so what strikes you about that? Okay, so it might just be that moms, yeah, forget whether they're safe or not, they just talk more than a dad does, yeah. So, again, it's something to think about if you're a mom or a grandma, that there's something especially powerful about the way you share about your faith. And again, tomorrow, we're going to look at dad's role, and it might be a little counterintuitive to what you're thinking. Some of the amazing parents that we interviewed just had a really simple way of connecting with their kids, and I'm trying to do this more because of our research, on that spiritual level, simply saying, how can I pray for you? I asked my 8-year-old 2 nights ago before we came here, how can I pray for you? And our 8-year-old, she's an introvert, and sometimes she has challenges in new environments and making new friends. And we're here with a big group of people, but there's really not a lot of folks her age and gender. And so, you know, I thought she was going to say something about making friends or whatever. But she said, you know, Mom, Mommy, pray that I won't be afraid of the woods. Totally random, but I thought there's something going on there. And so I made a note of that. I did pray. And then this morning, thank the Lord for helping remember, I said to her, hey, Jessica, you know, I have been praying for you about being afraid of the woods. How's that going? She said, oh, it's going really well, Mom. So, you know, out of the mouth of an 8-year-old, you learn what's going on. By the way, you who have high school and college students, a lot of parents find that when they text this question to their kids open up more than face-to-face. So especially when kids are out of the house, you know they've got a big test, whatever it might be, I'm praying for you, scripture verse. Both kids and parents have said that texting, for good or for bad, we could discuss that in a whole other seminar, but texting, there's often parents and kids can communicate more tender thoughts in texts than when sitting face to face. And again, there's something beautiful and tragic about that, in my opinion. Another idea we learned from our research is the power of saying I'm sorry. Since we did those 50 interviews about 18 months ago, this has become more of a pattern in my parenting. Some of the parents that we interviewed, who again are amazing parents, I remember one dad telling me, he's like, you know, I have apologized to my daughters 3 times this week alone. And I thought, man, I can relate. One mom talked about how when her son was in first grade, she had just had one of those demanding mornings before school. And this was one in a series of demanding mornings before school. And she just couldn't take it anymore. She said, I can't take you anymore. Go to your room, please. And the little boy, she said, just shrunk as she said those words and went to his room. But this mom knew that she had done some real damage to who he was and how he felt about himself, let alone their relationship. And so this creative, caring, thoughtful mom, while the kid was at school, went out and bought a Lego set and then wrote a note in 7-year-old language, I'm sorry for how I spoke to you. That's not how I want to talk to you. The boy never opened the Lego set. It was the note that was meaningful to him. This boy is now a college graduate. And because this mom has helped him move from high school to college and helped him move from college to an apartment out of college, she's at times sorted through his stuff. He still has that note that she wrote when he was 7, simply saying, I'm sorry. I find for me, a lot of what I apologize to my kids is not what I say, but how I say it. Just this past weekend, I had to apologize to my daughter. I'm going to talk about it tomorrow because it connects better with tomorrow's theme. But if you're a sensitive parent, odds are good that in the close living of Mount Hermon, you're probably going to need to apologize to your kid or children sometime this week. And in the spirit of sticky faith, I would encourage you to do so. Because of our research, we in the Powell family, we've tried to make talking about our mistakes more of a normal part of our life. Because I want to mirror for my kids what it looks like to know that I'm wrong, to apologize to others, to repent before God. So every night at dinner, we ask a number of questions, high and low, which we've been doing since our kids were like 2. But we've added another question because of our sticky faith research, and it's, what mistake did you make today? And a lot of times it ends with me apologizing for how I wasn't the mom that I wanted to be. And I'll tell you, my 8-year-old loves keeping track of my mistakes. Often there are 3 or 4 by the time dinner rolls around. The way I filled the soap dispenser in the kitchen and it overflowed, being late to something, forgetting something, etc. And I think that's great. I want us to be able to say, I was wrong, you were right, I'm so sorry, will you forgive me? And a trend in our research of families who have kids who tend to stick with their faith is that the parents have modeled that. Now, why in the world are we talking about Steve Jobs in the context of sticky faith? Another thing that parents model and create space for in families that build sticky faith is doubt and struggle. A little known story about Steve Jobs. It's in Isaacson's, I forget his first name, Isaacson's biography that came out right around Steve Jobs' death. It's like about 500 pages. How many of you have read it? Okay, a few of us have read it. I thought it was a page-turner. I thought it was one of Isaacson's better biographies about, how to be a good leader and how to be a really terrible leader. Both of that is wrapped up in Steve Jobs. But the story that I want to tell you is from when Steve was about 12. Steve was attending a Lutheran church in the San Jose area with his parents. Now, imagine Steve as a 12-year-old. Boy. Inquisitive, curious, probably a little bit of a practical jokester, super sharp, thinking outside of the box. And so 12-year-old Steve Jobs went to his senior pastor with a question. He said, Pastor, if I raise my pinky finger, does God know which finger I'm going to raise before I raise it? And the pastor said, Yes, Steve, God knows what finger you're going to raise before you raise it. And then Steve was very bothered by the starving children that we were hearing so much when he was 12 in Africa. He pulled out a Time magazine from behind his back and said, "Well, then, Pastor, does God know what's happening to these starving children in Africa?" And the well-intentioned pastor said, "Yes, Steve, God knows what's happening, and we need to trust God." Steve Jobs walked out of that Lutheran church that day as a 12-year-old boy and never again went back to church to worship. Now, as someone who cares deeply about teenagers, there are four words that I wish that senior pastor had said to Steve. And there are four words that I hope you say to your kids when they have hard questions. As we've studied families who have faith resilience, we've seen that it's not doubt that is toxic to faith, but silence. And this is, again, another counterintuitive finding of the research. We tend to think that doubts are bad. What we've seen in our research is doubts aren't bad. It's unexpressed doubts that are bad. And so the four words that I wish the senior pastor had said to Steve, and I hope you make part of your family vocabulary when it comes to big and tough questions about God. I have a PhD in practical theology. It's hard for me to explain why would God allow starving children in Africa or anywhere, planes to get shot down, etc. The four key words that I hope you adapt are these: I don't know, but. I don't know, but. I wish that senior pastor had said, "You know what? I don't know, but how about you, me, and your dad? Let's get together for coffee and talk about it." Or, "I don't know, but here's what God has shown me in the midst of some of my big questions." Or, "I don't know, but there's a woman in our church who loves wrestling with questions like this. How about if you, me, and your mom get together with her next week after church?" But instead, the pastor gave a well-intentioned but end-the-conversation answer, and Steve left unsatisfied. Now, I'm a fan of Apple and Mac products. I switched about a year and a half ago, and they are better than PC products. Steve's impact on our world through technology is undeniable. Now imagine if that same entrepreneurial, amazing energy had been channeled not just into technology, but into kingdom purposes. I think our world could have been different. I'm surprised when I sit and my son, our 13-year-old, I often have to ask questions to pull things out of him. The girls just talk, but he's someone I have to. And I'm surprised when I ask him questions like, "What are you wondering about God? What are you wondering about the Bible? What are you wondering about prayer?" How much deep stuff comes out of him, even as a fairly concrete thinking 13-year-old. These four words became especially important to our family about 7 months ago. So one of my closest friends, Chrissy, was diagnosed with terminal cancer about 2 years ago. And mom of four kids, incredible mom. When I first had Nathan, she was one of the two moms that I would pick up the phone and ask her for wisdom. And that pattern continued as my kids got older, because her kids are a little bit older than mine, so I could learn from her. So 2 years ago, she was diagnosed with terminal cancer. She and her husband made the very brave decision to do a kind of experimental chemotherapy that required her to leave their house in Pismo Beach and go to Arizona 4 days a week. She did this for a year. She left behind her four children ages 5 to 15 for a year to get this chemotherapy. And on May 8th of 2013, it was my daughter's birthday. We were at a pizza place. And Chrissy was going to get a big test that day that was going to indicate what was going on with the tumors. And so I walked out of the pizza place, stood on the street, and I called her. And the amazing news was that the tumors were gone. At that time in my life, it was the biggest divine healing miracle that I had personally been around. This was amazing. Well, you can maybe gather by the tenor in which I'm telling the story that while that was in May, the tumors came back in the summer of 2013. She was at our house in October to see a specialist at UCLA, had a seizure in our living room, spent the next month in the hospital more often than not, and passed away on November 3rd. And, you know, this is a woman of my age, phenomenal mom, phenomenal follower of Jesus. And when we talked with our kids about it, especially our daughter, she just reacted so strongly. We were sitting in our living room on the blue couch, as I keep referring to, and she ran out of the living room and into her room. And she just started stomping around her room in circles. And I went in and I sat on the bed and I just listened. And she said, "Mom, I don't understand why God would do this. Why would God give us the good news in May and then cause Chrissy to die?" And then she said something. She said, "Mom, a human wouldn't even do that." It's hard to say she's wrong. A human wouldn't even do that. Why would God do that? Now, before our Sticky Faith research, I would have rushed right in, and I would have pointed immediately to God's sovereignty, goodness, etc. And you know what? Eventually, we got there, and we're still getting there. A week later, she was emptying the dishwasher, and I was standing next to her in the kitchen, and she said, "Mom, I'm still mad." "About what, Krista?" "About Chrissy." She said, "I'm mad at God." And then she paused a bit and said, "And Jesus." And as I was looking over my notes for this, I thought, you know what? It's time again for me to sit with my daughter and process with her. And you know, we have talked as a family about Romans 5, 3 through 4, which if I was to delete a verse from Scripture, which I know is somewhat heretical for a theology faculty member to say, but if I was to delete a verse from Scripture, it would probably be Romans 5, 3 through 4. Because Paul writes in it, suffering leads to perseverance, perseverance character, and character hope. And see, I want perseverance character and hope for people I care about and people I've never even met without the suffering. But often the way God works, I don't understand it, is that suffering is part of life. He allows it and brings beauty out of it. But while my daughter was stomping around the bedroom, when she finally stopped marching, I just gave her a hug and said, "Special girl, I don't know. You know I've gone to a lot of school. I don't know why God would allow this, but here's what I do know." And that's just become our way of approaching those harder conversations with our kids. Something else we've seen in the research that we urge families and churches to share with kids is that Jesus is bigger than and can handle all of our questions. Jesus can handle all of our struggles, all of our doubts, all of our sin. If Jesus can't handle it, then you and I need a new Jesus. But Jesus can handle all that and so much more. And when it comes to what we mirror, in addition to modeling a vibrant, you know, consistent intimacy with God, and in addition to talking about the intimacy with God, saying I'm sorry, etc., I hope you can model that Jesus is bigger than our questions. We do have, by the way, I am terrible at talking about our books. I have to put a slide in with book covers to remind me to mention that we have books. So just know that this is not my strength. But because Mount Hermon asked, we brought some resources that are, I think, $7 for the student guide and like $12 for the adult guide. We developed these last months, really thinking about churches using them to ask hard questions. Can I ask that? 8 tough questions about life. But what's been interesting is how parents and grandparents are using them, especially with kind of 9th through 12th graders, to start having these honest conversations. So you might want to check those out. I said earlier that we were going to start with research and then go to ideas and end with a plan. And I think we have about 5 minutes before we need to go pick up our beloved children. And so I've given you 4 questions. That is probably too many to handle in 5 minutes. But what I would love for you to do, especially if you came here with somebody, like a spouse or a friend or a relative, is to pick 1 or 2 of those questions. In what ways do your kids model the beautiful parts of who you are and what you do? And then if you feel transparent enough, what about the less beautiful parts? How can you make better space to talk about doubts? And then which of these ideas most resonates with you? So let's go ahead and take about 4 minutes to talk over one or two of those questions and twos or threes. If you see somebody near you who doesn't look like they have, you know, somebody they came with, then let's be brothers and sisters in Jesus and go ahead and invite them into our conversation. So take about 3 or 4 minutes and then we'll close in prayer. All right. You know what? I don't want to interrupt conversations. So instead of praying or anything like that, I'll just encourage you. I can tell some of you still have some energy and things to say. So keep talking to each other. Somebody just asked, are the Tuesday and Friday seminars same content or different? Different content. Okay, so every day is a different aspect of how to build sticky faith. So may the Lord give us all wisdom and strength by his grace as parents. Keep talking. Go get your kids. See you at lunch.